Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Skyla Jeremias. Although the oncology space is well known for having the most successful biosimilar uptake, there are barriers that remain. Community oncologists and patients still have to reckon with pharmacy benefit manager, otherwise known as PBM, and payer formulary decisions, incentives for prescribing reference products, and inflated drug prices. However, community oncology practices have a unique opportunity to help boost biosimilar adoption and create savings for patients. Today, I'm joined by Mark Guillot, Senior Director of Unity Provider Engagement at McKesson, to discuss some best practices for biosimilar implementation in community oncology practices. Mark worked on creating and conducting McKesson's real-world analysis that identified challenges and provided necessary support and education for successful biosimilar adoption. The analysis also led to changes within community oncology practices, resulting in significantly decreased care costs for patients, as well as annual cost savings to Medicare, totaling over $164 million. Welcome, Mark. To start us off, what were some of the major challenges to biosimilar education and adoption that you found in McKesson's real-world analysis?
Yeah, so this is kind of the key component, I think, to all biosim adoption is ensuring, you know, that our practices are educated on what biosimilars are. And as a new entrant into the market, met with, you know, some historic brand recognition there. And within McKesson, we had to create FAQs, education on biosimilarity, what the FDA approval process was, the safety profile, understanding immunogenicity. And then really, this is the key component to biosimilars is defining interchangeability and then allowing pharmacy level substitution. So, you know, that's a multitude of different factors that we needed to educate on, but really the crux of it is once our doctors, our practices, and our patients are comfortable with the clinical aspect to it, it's getting, you know, the actual change in conversion of interchangeability and pharmacy level substitution that really allows for the transition to biosims.
How did McKesson use those results to inform their policies and practices to increase biosimilar utilization and create savings for patients?
Yeah, so I mean, the key component again is education. You know, creating we had internal biosim task forces for US Oncology as well as McKesson, where we talked about hurdles or payer issues that practices ran into, any clinical issues that came up when in regards to, you know, starting to utilize the biosims. Another major component I think that really helped us was we utilized Microsoft Teams to allow our practices to get that education on demand if they wanted it, right? Instead of, you know, one person talking to them, they could access this information directly on Microsoft Teams at any point. But really the major piece is, you know, the face-to-face or at the time, you know, webcam interactions with practices, you know, about biosim education and then bringing that to a macro level pharmacy and P&T committee, and then drilling that down even more so to the local P&T committees was a major, major win for us because, you know, those are who are actually, you know, doing the hard work, right? The therapeutic interchange and so forth like that. But there's also one other piece that expedited this process was the oncology care model, right? The oncology care model asked us to lower the overall cost to Medicare. And we had 11 out of our 26 practices at the time who were part of that. And they were very large practices. So that was another, you know, pressure that we needed to ensure was lowering that overall cost to Medicare. So we really started that in January of 2020 is, you know, the OCM and value-based care contracts that we have across the United States expedited that process for us as well.
What are some best practices the community oncology practices should keep in mind when looking to implement policies that encourage biosimilar utilization?
I mean, there's a theme here, right? It's education. You know, the more educated you are and comfortable in the fact that these products are highly similar and have the same clinical outcomes, you know, the better buy-in you're going to have from your physician side to start prescribing these. So I really think that part was the most important was the interchangeability aspect and the pharmacy level substitution. But also, it really helps within your electronic health record if you've got, you know, pre-checked products when, you know, the doctor is at the time prescribing these and entering them into the EHR. You know, if there's a pre-check that's available, that really helps the process as well, right? Now the pharmacist doesn't have to do the auto substitution. It's kind of all written there as well. So there's a lot of synergies that need to happen in order for these things to take off, and making sure that your electronic health record is up to date and ready to handle that is also a key component.
What can community oncology practices and healthcare professionals do to address issues with PBMs offering rebates that prioritize reference products over biosimilars?
Yeah, I mean, this is a major problem across all community oncology, right? I mean, it's the step therapy edits that our practices run into where physicians really don't get the ability to prescribe what they like or what they think is best for their practices and patients. So, you know, in this particular circumstance, when biosims launched, it took the payers a couple quarters to really embrace biosims as the new wave. And at that time, when this implementation came in place, we did work with some of our major payers to try and educate them on biosims. And really, it's going to lower the overall cost of care to them as well. So the education piece was a huge part of it. Thankfully, I think that's been well received, because now across the board in the United States, it's biosims or bust, right? And you know, that was 3 or 4 years ago when we implemented this, but now almost all major payers across the United States have biosims on their formulary. And that can also lead to some issues today, right? You know, for our practices in these biosimilar classes, you may have 3 or 4 different products on your shelves from a pharmacy side of things, because these payers are requiring that. And, you know, it's an unfortunate side effect for how things happen, but our role within McKesson is to ensure that we're educating our practices on this to kind of understand those implications. But, you know, we thought when biosims launched, we'd have one that can just replace the brand, but that is no longer the case.
Now, what role have biosimilars played in either being a part of or addressing the ongoing drug shortages that we're seeing as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, inflation, and the ongoing war in Ukraine?
Yeah, thankfully that we haven't run into too many shortages on the biosim side, at least in the bevacizumab, rituximab, and trastuzumab spaces. We did run into some shortages in pegfilgrastim. In those circumstances, when those shortages happen, it's kind of all hands on deck across the board, right? You know, we've got a dedicated team within McKesson to, number one, keep in track and understand when those shortages happen. But then we've also got to be able to provide our practices with a safe alternative to that product. Thankfully, you know, in the biosim space, if a biosim does become on shortage, you do have the innovator product that you could potentially use and get back to. Obviously, not as financially beneficial when it comes to end of quarter contracting and so forth like that. But having, you know, more players in the game really does help us out from a shortage side of things. And fingers crossed, we haven't had too many of those. And more biosims are continuing to launch. So that issue, maybe not so much. That issue certainly comes up in the generic space. In the generic space, when those types of shortages happen, you know, we do have education to our practices to let them know, you know, from a particular pathway or indication-based therapy, what the alternatives are and available.
How can practices' strategies for improving biosimilar adoption differ between larger and smaller practices?
Yeah, sometimes the smaller you are, the more nimble you can be, right? You can go directly to that physician lead right away and say, "Hey, look, this is where we're going to go. This is the opportunity that we're providing to us." And this is me talking as the pharmacist, right? Not me talking directly to the practice. But you know, our pharmacists go in there and have those discussions directly with those lead physicians and be able to be a little bit more nimble, more so than some of our larger practices. With our larger practices, it takes some time to educate everyone and get particular buy-in. But I think the key piece that I've talked about a few times is if you have a small P&T committee where you have your physician leaders and decision makers there, and you hold those P&T committees on a monthly basis, it does allow you to be a little bit more nimble and make those decisions relatively quickly. And in the biosim category, you know, empower our pharmacists to be able to do that pharmacy level substitution, which is so key in this category.
How are companies like McKesson uniquely positioned to address barriers to biosimilar adoption?
Yeah, so our role in McKesson is to ensure that our practices are informed of the landscape of community oncology, both from drug education to financial tools to implement biosim adoptions. But we're not just limited to biosim adoption, you know, therapeutic interchange across the board in community oncology where there are competitive landscapes or say where indications overlap. You know, we're positioned as a distributor to have those financial conversations with the practices and educate them on the changes that are happening. I mean, if anyone knows biosims, every single month right before the end of the quarter when CMS releases that ASP information, it's kind of the wild, wild west, right? You're not sure where the reimbursement is going to be in a particular category until you see it on paper. And then you really only have 3 or 4 weeks to make a potential pivot to another product if that is the desire of a practice to do so. So making sure we're out in front and educating our practices as early as we can as being part of McKesson is a key component in really fostering the partnership that we need to have with our practices.
What role do biosimilars play in the clinical pathways that McKesson offers to community oncology practices?
Yeah, so from a clinical pathway side of thing, I think it just gets back to that electronic health record update, right? You know, if the decision is being made and it's met with P&T committee's approval and pre-checked within your electronic health record from McKesson, our EHR is called iKnowMed. Those pre-checks certainly help the pathway portion of this to where when it gets to the pharmacy level and a decision was made to use one biosim versus another product, they may not need to do that substitution and it's all kind of flown through there. But with, you know, EOM coming in July, which is like OCM 2.0, you know, practices who have been able to start these biosim adoptions are going to be well prepared for that second coming of ensuring we're lowering the overall cost to Medicare.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts?
I do. Yeah, I do. So, you know, in the biosim space, it's been really unique and a little bit up and down as far as the stability of biosims over the course of the last 3 years in regards to reimbursement, right? And the margin that a potential practice can get. So basically what I'm speaking to is ASP depreciation, right? Depreciation of the margin that's happening across the board in biosims, which overall is a fantastic story to Medicare, right? We're lowering the overall cost to Medicare, potentially lowering the out-of-pocket costs to our patients. However, you know, the financial aspect of where our practices have potentially, you know, been able to be financially successful, the profitability of those products has essentially been cut in half, right, for the last 2 to 3 years. So it'll be an interesting way how our practices pivot in this new landscape of, you know, the slow and depreciating margins that we see in the biosims and having a potential plan of action in place for where you could switch between biosims based upon that margin is important. I mean, it's relatively the same thing that we talked about from brand to biosim as what we see from biosim to biosim. You know, the payer piece certainly throws some wrenches into this type of thought process, but being nimble and understanding where you can and can't press and push is going to be vitally important for the stability of community oncology in general going forward.
Well, Mark, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information on everything we discussed today in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.